Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A New York Times op-ed caught our attention last week. It's titled, Losing is Good for You. It's authored by Ashley Merriman, who is our guest this hour. And in part, she writes, as children return to school this fall and sign up for a new year's worth of extracurricular activities, parents should keep one question in mind. Whether your kid loves Little League or gymnastics, ask the program organizers which kids get awards. If the answer is everybody gets a trophy, find another program. She also writes, I thought this was particularly well, it's to the point, to her point. We need to refuse all of the meaningless plastic and tin destined for landfills. We have to stop letting the trophy industrial complex ruin our children's lives. Ashley Merriman is our guest. She is the co-author of the New York Times bestseller Nurture Shock, New Thinking About Children, and Top Dog, which has just been released, The Science of Winning and Losing. She has written for all kinds of publications, Newsweek, Time, Washington Post. She lives in L.A., where she has directed a small all-volunteer tutoring program for inner-city youth for almost 15 years, and she has received commendations from both the Clinton and the Bush administrations. I would think that this is an issue that you'll want to respond to. And you, of course, have the real-world experience of having children in sporting activities or in school activities. Are we giving away just way too many trophies? And what does it do to children for us to reward them for essentially showing up? Ashley, hello, and thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Did you get any trophies when you were little?
No. No, I was one of the kids who was not barely even picked last for any team or anything like that, which I think is important because the focus, I think, right now on giving kids trophies is all about the kid like me who never would have gotten a trophy otherwise. And that's part of the problem. If we're focusing on those kids who are struggling, we're never thinking about what effect this might have on the kids who actually are doing well or the kids who aren't doing terribly or, you know, or wonderfully, but are getting along. Mm-hmm. And we need to remember those kids are getting the same exact trophy as the kid who wouldn't have gotten one otherwise.
Well, see, it's because you didn't get a trophy that you now write bestsellers.
Well, there must be a correlation. I do sort of wonder, you know, there are lots of stories of, you know, people who were, you know, outcasts in high school, you know, on the way out saying, someday I'm coming
right
back.
And so she did, in full measure. Let's talk about the history of trophies. In the article, you write about the fact that they were once rare things, but in the 1960s, they became mass-produced, and it's now kind of a big industry.
Right. $3 billion
wow.
a year in the U.S. and Canada. And that's just trophies and prizes. That doesn't include the random person who prints out a certificate of excellence on their computer. It doesn't include, you know, gift cards instead. That's the actual, you know, tin and ribbons were hanging around kids' necks.
So why? Why did things switch in the 1960s?
Well, it seems to be, and I've talked to some trophy sort of industry historians about it, and they said that in the 1960s, someone got an idea that they should send trophy catalogs to teachers. Before then, a trophy was that big sterling silver cup that a rich country club would get for its big annual tournament. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much it. Maybe the occasional bowling trophy. But somebody thought, well, we could use this in teachers and maybe Little League catalogs to show them what to do. And that sort of started the ball rolling. And then I think there was a big additional push in the 1980s with the rise of the self-esteem movement and telling kids constantly, you're great, you're wonderful, you're smart. And then we could add proof of that, the fact that you actually got a trophy saying you're wonderful.
And then when you grow up, what are the complications of receiving that kind of praise for literally doing not much of anything?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think the idea is, you know, we create a safe space. Everyone gets a trophy. Everyone's told they're terrific. And therefore, kids won't be afraid to fail. And the research says that in some ways this works. until kids experience difficulty, but they become really invested in these ideas that they're great. So once they have that failure, once they have that mistake, they sort of panic, and they don't know how to recover. So research from Stanford's Carol Dweck, Mark Lepper, and others shows that effort and working through difficulty has become stigmatized, and kids tell Dweck, I'd rather cheat or, you know, read this Dr. Seuss book, even though I'm a fifth grader, because then I know I succeed. And there seems to be longitudinal effects for this. A college professor emailed me a couple days ago that one of her college students was caught in a plagiarism incident and said, well, I had to cheat, otherwise you'd have been disappointed in me.
Oh. So essentially what we're forgetting to do, or we don't know how to do, is to teach young people as they're growing up, and teach all of us, really, that our losses are something that perhaps, without being trite, that we can learn from, or that we're going to not get trophies all during our lives. We're going to lose more. We're not going to get the job more often right. than we are going to get the job or the increase in pay or the boyfriend and girlfriend or whatever. The list goes on and on. We should teach people how to deal with that?
Well, absolutely. So it's not about, you know, humiliating or breaking kids. It's not about teaching them to be losers. It's about, how do you come back from a loss? How do you come back from failure and mistakes? And absolutely, it's about persistence and resistance. And one of the researchers I mentioned in the Times piece, Jean Twenge, talks about how most people will probably lose more than they'll win, even if you're good at something. Because if you're good at it, then you get promoted to the next level. And you meet other people who are better, and the standards are raised. So now you have a period where you're going to struggle again. And then it's better to get used to this than to be at 25 and you haven't gotten a promotion and it's the first time you didn't get one. And you're like, what? And that's important for us to understand. And I think, you know, again, the message of everybody gets a trophy in theory is that it's less competition. But I would argue over time it's actually more competition, because it's telling kids you must achieve, you must come home every time with a trophy in hand. And the real life is, we know we screw up occasionally. We know that's not going to happen. It was interesting to me, the New York Times asked teenagers to respond to my article. What did they think? And which I thought was fascinating. And one of the kids said, oh, everyone should get trophies, because if only some kids got trophies, the ones who didn't get a trophy, they'd feel like they'd have to work harder.
Oh, no.
And that was obviously a huge problem. And I was like, oh, my God. I started sending that that list of comments to researchers, and they were like, oh, my God, we're using these in papers. This is ridiculous.
You cite in the article, which is really incredible, it shows you how far we've come on this. I think it's a Maryland summer program that gives awards every day to everybody, and the day is 1 hour long.
Yes. Yeah. You have a choice. You can do the 1 hour or the 2 hour day. But yeah, they use as a selling tool that they use awards as, you know, motivation and recognition. And that because of that, they have them every day.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So when should we give awards?
Well, you know, I like to use the military's explanation and their reference point. The sort of truism of the military is that a medal is not given, it's earned. And I think that's a really good way to sort of think about it when you're talking about kids. Did a three-year-old earn the medal for being in peewee soccer? No, they didn't even know what a medal was. They're running around having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're running around having fun, you don't need a medal. We're, as adults, saying having fun, learning skills, interacting with humans, learning social skills, that's not the reason enough to do anything. Instead, you have to have a medal. And I think that's a mistake. We need beginners, novices, to have a feeling that they're not being judged. They're just doing it to learn and experience it. So I'm not saying everything needs to be a competition. Far from it. I'm saying don't compete when there's no need to. As kids become intermediate in skill, more interesting, then the competition becomes a way for them to measure their improvement. And that's what we're looking for. You don't have to win every time. It's about saying, you didn't win today, but did you do better than last time? What do you learn from this experience
right.
that you're going to help to do the next thing? So again, it's about not looking at every individual contest as a must-win situation, but looking at that progress and growth. One of the parents told me a few days ago his kid went to a karate tournament. He came home with 8 medals.
Ooh.
He hadn't won anything. He got a medal for every single event he participated in one day.
For just it's being there?
Just for being there. He got 8 participation medals. Yeah. And, you know, one medal over, you know, one medal in a kid's life, probably not a problem. But 8, every single time you do something, it's sending a message that what you do to get medals is to show up. And Jean Twenge, as I mentioned before, she's saying we're not teaching kids to do things well. The focus is just to do the bare minimum. Check off the basics on the list, and then you're done. And not think about, how do I do things? How do I work through problems? How do I overcome this? How do I surprise people? It's all about the minimum.
Mm-hmm. And yet we're going to grow up in a world where if you want to be successful, you really are going to have to do more than the minimum, and you're going to have to be competitive.
Absolutely. You're going to have to figure out, when people say, no, you can't, how and when you say, yes, I can do this, and I'm going to push myself harder, I believe in this, I'm going to go forward. Absolutely, it's crucially important. But even in that, you still are going to have, you know, things that you decide, yeah, that's not important to me. This one really is. And again, I think that's a problem with the everybody gets a trophy, is it's not giving kids that opportunity to pick and choose what they are going to be passionate for, because everything is rewarded with the same level of gravitas, even though some things don't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Ashley Merriman is our guest. She wrote a piece which we'll put on our Facebook page. We did put it. It's on our Facebook page. It is on our Facebook page, KP says. So you can read it. It's interesting. It's looking at how many trophies. Can you believe what a huge business this is, the trophy business? It's amazing. Well, there are so many people giving $3 billion a year, she said, in the U.S. and Canada. People are being given, young people particularly, trophies for absolutely everything. Everybody gets a trophy. You're in a soccer game, everybody gets a trophy. Everybody gets a certificate, which renders them fairly meaningless. She says that children respond positively to praise. They enjoy hearing they're talented, smart, and so on. But after such praise of their innate abilities, they collapse at the first experience of difficulty. Demoralized by their failure, they say they'd rather cheat than risk failing again. Let's go to phone calls. Kenneth is our first caller in Janesville. Hi, Kenneth.
The whole movement was a reaction to, Vince Lombardi was kind of the leader of, winning is the only thing. And I saw it myself. I was in college in the 50s and in the 70s in graduate school. There were no curves in the 50s. There were only one or two A's in the class. And then in reaction to that, in the 60s and 70s, people were reacting to that. And then said, you know, we've got to give trophies to, we can give A's to everybody. Yeah.
There's a lot of that, too. Great inflation, isn't there? Is that similar, Ashley?
Yes. Jean Twenge and I were talking about another study, I believe out of UCLA, that has found that, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, no more than 15% of students would get A's. When they graduate, now it seems like it's more of a 40% have a GPA of an A, but there's no evidence in standardized testing that they've learned more, that they're doing better, or even that they spend more time in homework. So it's simply the grade inflation itself, and that Jean absolutely thinks that the trophies is the most visible of this, but there's a lot of other similar patterns going on throughout our society right now, yeah.
Do you agree with Kenneth's comment at the beginning that we do put in this society too much emphasis on winning, quoting Lombardi, winning is the only thing?
Well, you know, I think the problem is that right now we have a lot of, we're stressed out over that, and we don't know when to win and when not to. So we have these things like everybody gets a trophy, or I've heard, you know, my kid's soccer team doesn't keep score. And it's this illusion that there's no competition. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's, you know, Wall Street scandals every day, political scandals every day about competition. So right now I think there's this tension, and the problem is we need to know when to compete, when it's important, and when are things unimportant. And that, I think, right now is where people are struggling so much.
Thanks, Kenneth. Let's go to Gary. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Gary.
I'm a district and 4-H fair judge. And I see this, especially when I'm judging, that the parents more so than the kids think that, you know, their kids should win and should always be first place, where in reality a lot of the stuff isn't coming in to meet an excellent merit, and you're giving it a second or a third or a fourth, and they're getting all bent out of shape because their animal or their poster got a fourth when clearly they spent 5 minutes doing it and didn't put much effort into it at all.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So there shouldn't even be a fourth, maybe, huh, Gary? Maybe a first and second.
Right. And I've seen other judges, like in a photography project, where the judge is just handing out first and seconds all day. And I think, well, those kids aren't learning anything. If they ever do get a really good judge, they're going to be in for a very rude awakening because she's not teaching them how to improve their project. She's just saying, good job, good job, good job to everyone.
Yeah. Ashley.
I completely agree. I've been hearing this a lot. I mean, it's interesting in each different context to think about it. But especially something like 4-H, the intent is for the kids to learn from it, learn from the responsibility of taking care of the animals, learn from responsibility of, you know, planning all of this, and to have someone get, you know, just as equally recognized for, as he was saying, you know, 5 minutes of preparation, I think is really going to hurt the experience of 4-H. And I want to ask people, are you giving medals that actually go against the meaning of why the kid's there? You know, parents tell me they put their kids in soccer to learn teamwork. Like, but you got a medal even though the kid never went to practice. So what you've taught them is, in teamwork, it's okay to let your team down. And we got to think about, are the medals and awards we're giving really hurting the whole point of those activities, the lessons we really want kids to learn, way beyond, is it just a win or a loss?
Thanks, Gary, for the call. What was it? Was it a coach who you talked about, or was it your suggestion that looking at maybe a baseball team, the awards that should be given are for best all-around player, most improved player, and is there a third one?
I wanted the Grantland Rice Award. The author of the poem who wrote about how it was not how you won or lost, but how you played the game.
Right.
Well, those were my suggestions for what a coach might do instead of everyone getting a trophy based on the science that I have read and interviews I've given with the scientists. And it's, again, focusing on the fact that kids after 4 or 5, they know who's doing well. If you ask a kindergartner who's the best reader, who's the best athlete in the class, they know. They can tell you all of that. You know, the idea, well, if we don't keep score in the soccer, no. Parents don't post a score. If you ask the children, they know exactly who scored the goal, who fell on their face.
Yeah,
it's just they've been communicated. You're not allowed to post that. So kids understand who's the best. That's not a surprise to them. On the other hand, again, I would say give an even bigger trophy to the most improved, because there, the worst kid on the team at the beginning of the season can still be the worst at the end. But they improved the most. So the lesson is, that's what we want. We want effort and commitment and progress. And obviously, character is really important. You know, one of the things I worry about with the everybody gets a trophy, I've interviewed and talked with a lot of Olympic athletes, and when they put the gold medal around your neck, they don't say, but remember, it's not if you win or lost, it's how you played the game. No,
that's right.
We only tell that to the losers. Well, if you've always gotten trophies for everything you've done, has anyone ever said, go congratulate the kid who did better? Respect the other kid? Use that kid to inspire you? I don't think so, because none of these kids have ever lost. They're just being told, here, you did so great. Don't worry about those other kids who put in more time, did something. Don't respect their achievement. It's all about you and how much we can tell you you've achieved. And I think that's really missing out, and it's going to hurt a lot of kids on their, you know, later on.
Ashley Merriman is our guest this hour. Her piece in the New York Times, which caught our attention, is posted on our Facebook page, and you're welcome to look at that, and that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. We're talking about being rewarded for absolutely everything when, as her title suggests, losing might be good for you. We're in an age, started in the 60s, where young people are given trophies just sometimes for showing up for an hour-long event. Soccer teams, everybody gets a trophy on the whole team. What is that teaching us? What are the negative consequences as we grow up? And why do we do it? Why is this industry $3 billion in the U.S. and Canada? Here's our phone number. I'm sure many of you have experience with this or thoughts about it. Maybe you disagree with her, thinking that it is good for all of us. We don't get enough praise for what we do, and we should all get trophies just for being alive. Why not? It's hard to be alive sometimes. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Matt in Racine is next. Hello. Matt? Call us back, Matt. Don't know where you went. Jeff is next.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. I wanted to add that I do not agree, never have, with the concept that every child gets a trophy. For example, I've taught driver's ed for a number of years, and by the time kids are that old, they realize that if they do well, they get their license. If they don't do well, they don't get that driver's license.
Mm.
All throughout grade school, I grew up a little earlier, so I didn't have the trophy scenario in life. But I would agree with you very much that it is all about what do we do when we fall. It's not about falling that's a terrible thing. It's what do we do after. But the bigger point is, too, I would encourage a system whereby, and I don't mean to aggravate anybody by this, but I would encourage a system where teachers have the opportunity to see what's happening in, sometimes it's industry, sometimes it's medicine, sometimes it's other areas. There's never a doctor or a lawyer that you will talk to that will agree that effort doesn't pay off. Sometimes I think we get so involved in teaching what would be philosophically a good thing that we lose track of the reality of life. Does that make sense?
Ashley?
Well, obviously, I think effort is crucially important, and you know what people are doing in terms of persistence and things, I 100% agree. I think that Jeff is right on, and we need, you know, in something like driver's ed, it's important. You can't just show up, because just showing up is enough to get you in an accident. You need to actually be really present and focused, and that's what we want to teach kids.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And do you think that it's really harder to do all of that now? I think persistence is a wonderful quality, and yet I think about the world in which we operate right now, Ashley, that makes it so easy for us to go from thing to thing and to not spend a whole lot of time perfecting anything because we've got all of this stimulation coming our way in televisions and tweets and Facebook and news all the time. Is it harder to learn what you were describing?
I think it's easier to use those distractions to cover up difficulty. So I agree in that. You don't need to sit there and think about the bad grade you got or the bad day at the soccer game or the fender bender you might have had at driver's ed, because there's so many other opportunities to distract you, and that we use those to just, you know, keep pushing any sort of hardship away. But the researchers, especially the creativity researchers, say that, you know, innovation, strength, that comes from being bored. That comes from being by yourself and having to think through problems. And if we never have that moment of quiet, it that itself can be a problem.
Mm. Thank you, Jeff, so much. Irvin in Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. I was listening when somebody mentioned the Lombardi quote and mentioned winning is the only thing. The only thing is that I had read Lombardi's biography, and he actually regretted that because what he meant to say was winning isn't the only thing. The pursuit of winning is the only thing, or is everything. And that's what he meant to say, and I think that's how he lived his life, you know, is that trying to be excellent was the most important thing, because not everybody can always win. And so I thought that was interesting, and I think a lot of people misuse that quote because it wasn't even what he meant to say.
Yeah, but that's what he said. So
I know.
But I understand what you're saying, and it's a better quote when you think about it that way, isn't it, Ashley?
Oh, absolutely, because it is understanding that even in football, it's not about a quarter or a specific game. It's how you did over the season. So you have to keep pushing yourself and do demand excellence, but that's not always the same thing as saying, I have to win every time I go out on the field. I have to go every time to a job interview or a client meeting and do anything I can to win. And that's really important. In Top Dog, we write about adaptive competitiveness, and that's understanding that it's about progress over time, and you may not win every single day. And it's the maladaptive competitor, the one who's willing to cheat or lie to get ahead, mm-hmm. who says, no, I have to win at everything and do every time, you know, be successful.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Irvin. Benjamin in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi. I wanted to make two comments. One is, when I was in grade school, I kind of saw the coming of all of this, because it all started originally when it was the first place trophy, the second place trophy, and depending on how many people were there, the third place trophy. When I was in grade school, that's kind of when they brought on the honorable mention. Okay, it wasn't first, second, or third, but he still did pretty good, so we're going to give him a trophy as well. And I think that really led into the whole participant medal and whatnot. And then I also wanted to mention that it's not even just with kids anymore. I'm a member of Toastmasters, and they have competitions twice a year. And for those competitions at every level, at club, area, division, and district, everyone who's in the contest gets a participant certificate.
Great.
And so it's not even just with kids anymore. Now it's adults as well.
And then you just throw it out. It's meaningless, isn't it? Oh, I participated. You don't need that.
Right. You remember
you
participated.
For more than 20 years, you have enough participant certificates to wallpaper your den.
There's a good use for it. Go ahead, Ashley.
If you do that, will you send me a picture? I would love it.
She'd put it in the book, or at least online. That's great, Benjamin.
I think I'd make it the cover of the book.
Right.
Are you kidding?
Thanks so much for the call. Michelle in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi there. I'm really enjoying the topic, and I have to say I agree a lot with your guest. And I was thinking, when you were saying how kids are not finding what they should be passionate about, or maybe when they should pick something to try harder, I think it comes down to they're not figuring out what they're good at either. That by there was the county fair judge that was talking about kind of ranking kids and giving them first, second, third, fourth. And if you are always being rewarded for something mediocre, and then you go on to try to pursue that as a career and you're not that good at it, then where is that leading a person as well?
I agree, Michelle. I think that, yes, we need honest feedback. It doesn't have to be crushing or insulting, but honest
right.
feedback in terms of when you improve is absolutely invaluable. And, you know, I was mentioning earlier about my sort of hypothetical baseball coach. A researcher out of NYU, Gabriella Antonin, said that she's done experiments with kids where, you know, they're learning a foreign language, you know, German kids learning English. And she said, what's the best outcome that you can have from learning English? And they think big. Oh, I could tweet Justin Bieber, and he would just, you know, he'd tweet me back, and we'd be best friends. And then some of the kids, she says, now I want you to think about the obstacles. What stands in your way of that happening? And the kids who think about the dream outcome and the obstacles, on average, their end grade for the semester is an A. The kids who only had the fantasy of what's awesome, their average grade's a B. Because the kids who understand from the get-go what the obstacles are start thinking immediately of how they're going to overcome them. they'd start thinking, wow, if I really want to learn, you know, enough English to tweet Justin, then I'm going to have to play less video games and learn more vocabulary. But you think about it, the kids who only had a fantasy, that's a zero-sum game, right? They either don't know enough English to tweet Justin, or they do, one or the other. The kids who were doing the obstacles think, well, I still don't know enough English, but I played less video games and I've learned more words. I'm on my way. So again, looking at the obstacles isn't about breaking kids. It's actually giving them a tool so that they can figure out how to move forward and find those things that they love, they're passionate about, and that they're going to be good at.
Thanks, Michelle, for the call. Here's a challenge for you from Paul on email, who wonders that with young people, do you absolutely and exclusively want to reward the winner or foster participation and collaboration? Is the child who beats and overcomes the other children the model?
Well, again, I was always suggesting you have a character award, right? So, and in the character award is about respecting the opponents, respecting the kids on your team, helping them, you know, being a leader and an example. It's not about how you're going to embarrass your friends. And I think right now, with everybody getting a trophy, the kids may on their own embarrass each other, but they just don't let the parents catch it. I also think that, again, you may not want to have trophies at all. I don't think the answer is give everybody a trophy. If that's the concern, then don't get anybody a trophy, because it's about telling kids, we're looking for how you improve. Are you proud of yourself? And that's really interesting. The psychologists talk about the importance of the value of agency, which is the ability to set a course and pursue your agenda, know when you need help, but if not, keep going on your own. And if we keep giving kids trophies, no matter what, we keep saying, don't listen to how you think you are about something, going back to Michelle's point, we'll tell you when you're good and you're fabulous. And again, we need to let the kids figure this out. So I don't think we should give everybody trophies. I'd rather no one got a trophy than everyone get one that was meaningless.
Mm-hmm. Chuck and Nina, hi.
Hi there. I have a couple comments. My first one is, it was alluded to by the gentleman who spoke about 4-H, and I think this is just such a critical component, and that is the fact that the trophies are for the parents. The parents are the ones that need their ego is a slice, if their child is as good as everyone else. So therefore, we have bowed to this pressure. I think that's a shame, but I believe that's the case. Secondly, I work with thousands of young people in soccer constantly. 2 days a week, I work with 80 3- and 4-year-5-year-olds and 5- and 6-year-olds. I ask those children, after they come off field in their games where all the parents are on the sidelines, everybody's acting very typical, they, what did you win? Those kids do not know. I would like to see the research where people have gone out and actually asked every single kid that came off if they won. Most of them don't know. Now, one in X number does know, and typically they have a parent who is an absolute fanatic. I also run a program one day a week where I get anywhere from 30 to 60 kids. There are very few parents there, and when they come in the door, the first thing I tell the parents is they cannot coach their children. I would prefer that they not cheer for any child by their name, and that they just watch. And the kids play. It's the exact same game, the exact same opportunity to compete, and they all compete like crazy, and when they're done, they don't know who won until they're about 8 years old. And I would hate for this article and this program to be something that says, oh, all 3- and 4-year-olds know how to compete, so therefore we should start treating them as competitors at these young ages. I think that's a shame, and that's my comment.
All right, Chuck, thanks for the call. Wait till the age of 8 to keep score. Ashley?
Well, I think Chuck misunderstood my point. I said that at around the age of 4, kids are good at discerning ability, who's good at something, who's not. But I absolutely agreed with him. As I said earlier, I'm not in favor of turning everything into a competition. Beginners need to learn how to just do something without pressure of scores, without pressure of trophies. I absolutely think that that's true. My concern is that we're giving 4-, 5-, 6-year-olds who don't know the rules well enough to know if they've won or lost, we still give them trophies. I would say no trophies. So I'm not about encouraging competition for young children who are still trying to master the basics of a skill, whether it's soccer or baseball or reading or anything like that. What I'm saying is that everybody gets a trophy is the thing that's actually putting them in this competition program. I'm not suggesting that 3- or 4-year-olds be in it. I do think that, you know, they do discern fairly quickly 4 or 5 years old who's better at something than they are, but that doesn't mean that, you know, we should, you know, organize it into a complete competition. Absolutely not.
Ashley Merriman is our guest. Her New York Times piece caught our attention. It's on our Facebook page in case you'd like to look at it. It's titled "Losing is Good for You." She's the co-author of the New York Times bestseller Nurture Shock, New Thinking About Children, and her latest book is Top Dog, The Science of Winning and Losing. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's go back to phone calls. Kevin in Wisconsin. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to say is one of the most dangerous consequences of this trophy culture is that when you look at classrooms at colleges and universities, even if teachers, professors want to give students the grade that they truly deserve, they can't, because every other professor is giving the students the good grades that you mentioned earlier. 40-50% get A's. So if you have one or two courageous teachers who stand up and give kids the grades that they truly deserve, the students will penalize the teachers.
How do they
penalize? Because, as you say, because throughout their lives they've been used to receiving good grades and the trophies.
How do they penalize the teachers, Kevin?
Well, as you know, in the culture of higher education, every student at the end of the semester is asked to fill out a teacher evaluation form.
Mm-hmm.
That's the chance where students can give professors feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So students who are given bad grades will give the professors bad grades.
Ashley.
Bad feedback.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ashley?
Well, I've heard from many professors complaining about that, and adding to it that, you know, you get a reputation on campus as being a tough grader, so no one just takes the class. And then the dean yells at you that you're in a class that's got empty seats, and professors need jobs too. So I've heard that complaint as well. I think it's really important to understand that when, you know, we do need to have kids have this opportunity to be told yes, to be told no, and that it isn't such a huge problem. I absolutely agree with Kevin.
That's amazing that you give 40 to 50% A's in a class. Is that fairly common?
Well, I think that what I was mentioning was the study was how many students graduate from high school with an A average. And it seems to be that the new trend is, I believe the study out of UCLA said it was around 40%. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kevin. Jan in Chippewa Falls. Hello.
Hi. Kathleen, I'll bet you know about this story. Did you hear about that librarian somewhere? They had a reading competition,
mm-hmm.
and she ended up getting in all kinds of trouble because one boy in the town kept winning year after year after year, and people started complaining. But he clearly loved to read, and he read the most books. And I think that she, you know, I don't think they said it was for this reason, but I think she was fired.
Oh, no.
She stood up. Yeah, she stood up.
Oh, yeah, she was fired.
To the library and said, this boy clearly won. And they wanted to put forth a new policy where, you know, it made it possible for more kids to get the winning prizes.
Well, that's just goofy, for heaven's sake, isn't it? That's terrible. It's unfair, too. You know about this, Ashley. I hadn't heard about it, Jen.
Yes. And the main question I have in that particular instance is, when did they want to change the policy? Because the research says that kids don't need a guarantee of success, but they need a fighting chance. They need to feel like there's a chance they're going to win. And in this particular case, considering the boy had won several years in a row, the other kids may certainly have given up because he was reading something like 100 books and the other kids, I don't know, 4, 5, 10. So I think, you know, at the beginning of the contest, setting up those rules and making sure that you have stratification. Maybe you have a separate category for the advanced readers or the a new rule, you know, you can't have, you know, repeat winners after X number of years so that other kids get involved. But what I think is really interesting, and this plays back to Kevin's comment as well, is a lot of the trophies are given out because it's about the reputation of the organization. You know, if in essay contest, do they want lots of kids involved? Then they maybe give $110 prizes. But maybe an organization is looking and saying, oh, well, we really want to find some kids who are going to get scholarships, so we're going to give three prizes for, you know, $200 a piece, and everybody else gets nothing. Fewer kids enter, but the kids who are really motivated and working hard will go for that one. But in those, none of that's about the well-being of the kid. It's about the organization. And a professor at Northwestern, Noah Lim, was saying, if you've got an organization that's giving 60, 70, 100% trophies, it may not be about the kids at all. It's about they're worried that the kids and the parents won't register,
right. Yeah.
And they're going to some other program that gives even more trophies.
Thank you, Jan, very much for the call. Scott on email, let's read a couple emails here. His nephew was very involved with sports, clearly not as talented, but got equal playing time and awards. Once he hit high school and had to try out for a position on a team, he could not make the team, and he was literally lost.
Oh.
I know. Somebody just needed to let him know where he stood earlier on, huh?
Well, again, it's not about breaking kids, but somebody probably should have said, you know, Scott, we love that you're so excited and participating, but we need to work on your specific skills,
right,
if you want to go to that higher level. Just to keep saying you're as great as everyone else, I think was ultimately became a huge disservice to his nephew. That's
right.
So sad.
And here's another email. If a child comes out for an activity and stays to the end, even when they're not the best, they deserve recognition as they are heads and shoulders above all the others who never tried. Our awards only for the gifted.
Oh, I disagree. I think that participation on a 5-, 6-, and 7-year-old level is not warranting an award, especially when you're talking about something like soccer. Kids are having fun. They're playing, and we shouldn't have to give them awards for playing. We should just encourage the fact that they're not going to give up. If you're talking about a, I don't know, senior citizens run marathon, and they finish and you want to give them medals, that's a different conversation than 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds who are just learning how to do something. No, a few hours of their time, they didn't even drive there, right? They didn't even they didn't even decide to go or not. And their parents may have left and said, I'll be back in the afternoon. Why are you going to give them credit for the fact that their parents didn't pick them up until the carpool did? No, I disagree.
Okay. Michelle in Kenosha. Hello.
Hi, thank you. What a timely and great topic. And that just made me tie into what I wanted to ask, too, is the age thing. I think the whole reward is tied up with the age of an individual. As you just said, kids are made to do things or have to do things. And parents, maybe the previous gentleman with the Toastmaster thing, maybe somebody really, really, really had to overcome a fear of speaking, and that participation award might be valid. But I just wanted to say I have encountered this as a parent and a teacher, and I can't even, it's teams, it's individual competition. My children are involved in a music competition, which is just about bettering your own personal performances. But the ratings scale, which is 1 to 5, I have never seen a 5 in a decade of my kids participating. I've seen a 4 once, maybe, and usually 1s and 2s. And I just, you know, where are all these stellar musicians as they grow older? And I think that that is a false reward, and that is more about the organization. So thank you for distinguishing between those categories and also that sense of underachievement if you're told the wrong thing. I was involved in an elementary academic team. Another school's teacher coaches said they never even told the kids the results, and they let them think they won because that was, you know, that they didn't want to let them know how badly they lost from year to year. And I just thought, great, they'll go on to middle school and high school then and not know what it takes to work hard and put out that effort. So thank you for a very timely topic.
Thanks, Michelle. Ashley?
Thank you. I know a child who gave me a certificate of completion a few days ago, and she said, look, I graduated. And I read the certificate, and it was for having done 8 hours of homework.
Oh, my.
And I was just like, no, sweetie, I'm sorry, you haven't graduated. And we still need to actually practice her vocabulary words. And she was really very furious with me because she had a piece of paper in her hand that said she was done. And I think that, you know, in some ways, you know, awards give the message, you know, do they give the message, you've now achieved, you can check this off of your bucket list, 5 and 6 and 10-year-old, you don't need to work on this anymore. And that's, you know, not going to work in the real world. I was at a concert, and a musician said that he had kept wanting to give up, give up when she was a kid, and his parents said, you're not old enough or good enough to know when to give up yet.
That's a good one. Margaret in Stoughton. Hi, Margaret. Oh, your phone is really bad. Hello? Margaret? Oh, Margaret just sounds like she's, well, I can't hear her, so she can't talk because we can't hear her. Deb in La Crosse. Hi.
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 I've really enjoyed this program. In fact, I was out walking, and I sure miss you on the morning because now I don't get to listen to you every day. But anyway, so my thoughts on this is I agree with a lot of what your guest is saying and some of your callers, but I think that we should try to figure out how to have coaches or teachers or something kind of change things up too, because I'm thinking about myself as a child and being involved in sports and stuff like that. And I guess like what the situation is sometimes coaches or teachers look at the best students. So like you're talking like softball or soccer, not everybody's that good at it, but they give their all and they really, really try. But they're never going to be that good. Well, coaches kind of work with them at the beginning, but then it's all about winning. I mean, it's all about being the best. And, you know, I look at, I had a niece that was in middle school, and, you know, she's not the best softball player, but she was so proud to play. And we practiced, and she tried. And then as the season went on and towards the end of the season, you know, they wanted to win. They wanted to win. And she didn't really even get to play anymore. And that broke her spirit. This year, she refused to go out. You know, and I see that a lot with kids. I wish there was something, you know, I mean, I understand not everybody can be the best. But a lot of times, coaches, even band, you know, they don't stick with those kids sometimes, and they focus on the winning, and I think that's not right.
Yeah, I see a lot of that as well. We have about 30 seconds, Ashley.
Well, it is all about improvement, and we do want to focus. You know, I wrote in the op-ed about how soccer teams spend as much as 12% of their budgets on trophies, which is twice as much as they spend on coaching clinics for the kids. I would rather have that girl get extra time and attention in a separate environment, not in that main practice, because she's feeling outclassed. You give her that individual attention and work with her on her strengths to give her that motivation to keep going and not feel like I'm either one of the MVPs or I'm nothing, because that's just not the way the world works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more about giving kids the opportunity to grow rather than focusing on the winning. Absolutely.
Thank you for the call. Ashley, thank you so much. Just a lot of interest in this topic. Thank you. Ashley Merriman, her piece in the New York Times is on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. She also is co-author of a new book, Top Dog, The Science of Winning and Losing. Thanks to KP Whaley and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program. Thanks for all of your calls, everybody. Great conversations ahead, and we'll be with you again tomorrow.